Good morning and welcome to chapel. I'm Lori Lehman and my husband Jim is standing down here with our wonderful cross-cultural group. We took 14 students to Kenya in East Africa this past May and June, and we're going to share a little bit about our time there. We built a sand dam with a Mennonite Central Committee project, climbed a volcano, saw some wildlife, spent some time on the Indian Ocean, worked at sustainability issues, planting trees, and also visited and contributed some time in three different educational settings there. So I hope you enjoy what our students have to share this morning.
Hi, my name is Jacqueline Kratz. One of our group members, Erin Johnson, could not be here today, but she wanted me to read the following to you. Sorry I could not be with you guys, but I'm currently teaching. Here's just a brief summary of my time in Kenya and the impact it had on my life. It is hard to describe just how much this trip meant to me. The journey that I went on during my time in Kenya is something that I will always be grateful for and will never forget. Each day, I learned something new about not only the Kenyan culture, but also about myself. I was able to grow in many ways that will truly make my life better and change the way that I see the world. I made many new friends and continued to build on the friendships that I already had as well. I am thankful for our time in the tiny town of Kola. It gave us the opportunity to become closer and get to know one another. I will never forget watching The Lion King in front of a small computer screen. It was great to see Jim's reaction to the movie, as he had never seen it before. I met such wonderful people in this tiny town, and I was touched by their hospitality on numerous occasions. Many of my fellow travelers and I formed relationships with our host families. Even though we were only with them for a short weekend, it was a weekend I will never forget. I enjoyed spending time with them, just talking and getting to know one another. I will always remember them and hope to keep in touch as much as possible. The biggest relationship that I saw grow was that between God and myself. I have always had a relationship with God during the many struggles I have faced, but I feel like I grew tremendously in my spiritual self on this trip. I continually felt God's presence in the different things that we did and saw. Going to church with my host family and then in the small town of Kola was inspiring to me. The love these people show for the Lord, even when they do not have much, is incredible. I encourage each of you today to find something in your life that you are thankful for and continue that each day. Since coming back from Kenya, I have continued this relationship with the Lord and thank Him for the many blessings I have given and continue to receive. Letting go has always been difficult for me, for whatever reason. During my 3 weeks in Kenya, I was able to let go of many things that had happened in the past. I was able to forgive others and myself for things that had happened. I had time to reflect on these things and lay them to rest so that I could move on. My time in Kenya was a blessing to me and something that I will always cherish. I will use all the knowledge and wisdom I gained to become a better person and teacher. I honestly did not want to leave, and I hope to return at some point in my life to teach. Thank you, God, for making this trip possible and making it such a life-changing experience.
Good morning. My name is Katie Miller, and I'm sure by now you guys have grasped that we had a great time in Kenya, made lots of memories, and want to go back. But my portion of chapel today isn't to tell you about any specific memory, but I hope you leave with a desire for God, an excitement for cross-cultural, and the feeling of overwhelming blessing. When I entered EMU last year, I was dreading a cross-cultural. Being thousands of miles away from home didn't sound like my idea of a good time. I was determined I was not leaving this country. I was prepared to write a novel on why I did not need to go to another country. I would transfer schools, but I would do whatever it took, but I was not leaving. A short year later, here I am standing before you, telling you about my trip halfway across the world, wondering how I can get EMU to send me back. Near the end of the trip, we spent 5 days in a rural part of town called Utoni. Each day we rode in our vans on the mountainside as far as we could make it and then hiked the rest of the way where we would be working on our sand dam project. A sand dam is a reinforced concrete wall built on a bed of rock across a seasonal river to capture and hold water under the sand over a rainy season. We built these structures by mixing sand, concrete, and water by hand and carrying rocks to present a layered structure inside the wooden frame. I think my entire group will agree that this labor was quite exhausting under the African sun, but there is a reflection of hope in every native's eye we encountered, a sense of relief that life wouldn't be so difficult, and an abundance of joy that God answered a prayer. We learned that without a sand dam, children are forced to travel 11 kilometers, which equals about 22 miles to get water. The water that these children are gathering isn't from a well, it isn't from a faucet, and it's far from clean and clear. Due to the poor living conditions and lack of water, most kids are pulled out of school and sent to fetch this water for survival. The sand dam structure can decrease the amount of time and distance from 11 kilometers to 2.2 kilometers, and an average time of 6.2 hours to 54 minutes. The only downfall of this seemingly amazing invention is that the cost of a sand dam can be up to $15,000. That's $15,000 just for supplies. All labor during a sand dam construction is volunteer of the surrounding communities. One day, we had 200 Kenyans helping us build a sand dam to better their living. 200 Kenyans that danced and sang all day in the heat. 200 Kenyans who prayed over and over a thanks to God for this blessing. 200 Kenyans who are rich in God's presence and mercies. And 200 Kenyans' perspectives and attitudes that changed our lives. During our week in Utoni, myself and my group experienced a cultural journey as well as a spiritual one. By the end of the week, we are thankful for the metal cots we slept on, for the 5 cups of warm water given to us for a bath, and for the holes in the ground that served as our toilets. By the end of the project, we became less angry with God as to why life is so different in other countries and began to see that even in the midst of nothingness, our Kenyan friends were better off than us because they simply trusted God with every minute of the future. So today I ask you to say a prayer every time you come in contact with water, whether it's when you're showering, drinking a glass of water, or washing your hands. Thank God for the blessing of water and pray for our friends and families in Kenya who may not know where their water is coming from tomorrow. And for the people in this room who fear cross-cultural, take a leap of faith because your life will be changed and God will reveal himself to you in many ways. Make yourself vulnerable because God is the same over time and distance. If you let yourself trust God, another country will change your life the way the Kenyan community changed ours.
Jambo. I'm Valerie Meza Cooper. Coming from a country where we rely on ourselves individually, Kenyans have that sense of family and community. The hospitality Kenyans showed to us, Muzungus, meaning white person, was outstanding. They allowed us into their country to get to know their culture and the life of a Kenyan. Make sure you come back to visit. You can stay with us again, said my host family. Leave some clothes here so you can make sure to come back and visit. Our host families allowed complete strangers from a different country to come into their homes. They fed us, cared for us, provided beds for us, and talked to us as if we were their children. Our group felt very uncomfortable at first about the services they provided for us, but we finally viewed the way of living as a courtesy of a Kenyan culture.
Good morning. My name is Michael Sumner, and I was part of the local content cross-cultural program this summer. Our group was guided by Deanna Durham, and our journey covered 3 different narratives, which covered Brethren and Mennonites, African-American studies, and new immigrants. Throughout our 3 weeks, we had many trips in the Rockingham and Harrisonburg community, participated in various community leaders. Participated in various discussions within the classroom, which included various community leaders, undertook many difficult topics. At the end of our 3 weeks, our group traveled to Washington, D.C. I consider this trip more of a journey that opened up many of our eyes, forced us to truly listen to each other's perspective with an open mind, and understand a person's struggle to live and survive. Kelly Zirkel will now speak more about this heart-opening experience.
Good morning. As Michael said, we did spend 3 days in D.C. It was a very eye-opening experience for everyone. The trip really gave us the opportunity to observe the way other people lived. Even though it wasn't really far away, it still was a lot different than what a lot of us were used to. The trip gave us the opportunity to observe the way people lived in different cultures. And even though a lot of what we saw was different than the way most of us live, we were actually able to see things from someone else's perspective, which in turn made us understand and be more compassionate towards other people's situations that we may have normally had preconceived notions about. And a lot of us, including myself, learned just that. A lot of our beliefs were preconceived notions that were not based on facts or any previous experience. We visited many neighborhoods, churches, and restaurants in different places in DC. But for me, visiting Joseph's House was a life-changing experience. For those of you who are not familiar with Joseph's House, it opened in 1990 in response to the AIDS crisis in Washington, DC, and provides comprehensive nursing and support services to homeless men and women dying of AIDS and cancer. Their mission is nurturing the living and accompanying the dying. What really struck me the most, and a lot of other people, when we visited Joseph's House was all the pictures all around. There were pictures everywhere of all of the patients who had been there throughout the years. The pictures are a way to honor and remember people who otherwise may have never been recognized or cared by their family or for anyone else for that matter. Observing the interactions between the staff and patients was not the typical patient-provider relationship that you would expect to see. Each person there is loved and cared for as family, and without Joseph's House, many of them would die a lonely and isolated death. For me personally, since I'm going into nursing, visiting Joseph's House really changed my perspective and also shaped the way that I want to provide nursing care to my future clients. In conclusion, I want to read a poem that was written by one of our classmates, Adam Posey, and this was for our final presentation. As I sit and watch an old family video, I see myself 18 years ago. The 4-year-old version is young, freckled, smiling, and not yet cynical towards the outside world. My 4-year-old self swings at golf ball after golf ball. He splashes in the pool and clings to his mother. Some things never change. As I continue watching this child in this video, I came across a clip of his mother telling him a story. She speaks of 4-year-old Adam playing in the yard at his house in Hampton, Virginia, while his dad works on a truck. In this story, she explains that while Adam is playing, a young black boy comes across the street and begins to play with him before his dad, who has now fully fixed his attention on the two children, steals him away from his new companion. "You don't need to be playing with that black boy," his father explains to him. "My heart sinks. I want to grab them both in that moment. I want to tell my dad what he is about to ingrain in this child. I want to tell him that his view of a different people is so warped that it disgusts me. I want to explain to him that there's no need to fear that which he cannot understand. I want to scream at him and tell him that his interaction with a contingent of people does not have to determine his view on everyone that is similar. I want to grab that young innocent kid and tell him that these people are just like he is. I want to explain to him that black, white, yellow, brown, and whatever other color he can imagine can coexist, like in the box of crayons he used to draw with, making pictures of baseballs and Barney. I want to let him know that the culture he is about to be raised in does not have to define the way he interacts with people. They both need to know what I know now. They both need to know these people. They both need to know the perspective of these people. They both need to hear the struggle of these people. They both need to understand freedom and what these men and women have done to fight for just a sliver of it in our land of opportunities. They need to stand on that street corner in DC and look at these people in the eyes and feel their anger. They need to hear their stories. They need to learn about their culture. They need to find out who these people are. I look at this kid, I see in him at that moment so much love for everyone and everything around him. I know his story after that. I know the culture he will be raised in. I know what city that he will call home. It's a story that could be so different if they could experience then what I've experienced now. A narrative of hate could be one of love. A tale of foe could be one of friends. A story of oppression could be one of freedom. I want to grab them both and tell them we are all God's people.
Good morning. My name is Caitlin Henson, and I went on the Iran cross-cultural this past summer. I thankfully did not go alone, could not have gone alone, but I'm the only one here today, and I'll tell you a little bit why that is, who we were, and why we went. I went as one of 10 students, 4 from the United States and 6 from Canada, and there are only 2 of us still on campus. And Nate Schleba is the other, and he couldn't be here today. But we were offered an invitation to go on a student exchange in Iran, which is pretty unique. And this invitation led us to taking classes, to engaging in interfaith dialogue, and also to attending conferences. We spent the first 10 days in Qom, which has been referred to by my Iranian friends as the Vatican City of Iran. It's the religious capital, which in an Islamic republic translates into the political capital of the country. And as I thought about what to share and what to reflect, I came up with more questions than reflections. So I'm just going to read my first journal entry and then offer a reflection that's really more of a question and hope the opening of a conversation. So here's my first journal entry. Sometime in late 2013, I received an email that had been forwarded to all of the students at the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding. Honestly, I don't really remember what the email said, just that it was an invitation to participate in a cross-cultural exchange in Iran. As someone who has been interested and invested in the region for a really long time, I did a little bit of a double take. I was like, really? Iran? I didn't even know that US Americans could get visas. So a seed was planted, an invitation was given, and a seed was planted. One of the friends that I was able to make while in Iran is an author and a theologian and a pretty phenomenal woman, and she shared something with me, and something that she, a beautiful quote that I wrote down of hers, is she said, "The seedbed of hatred is ignorance of the other, and the seedbed of love is knowledge of the other." It seems simple, but it's not very simple. Invitations are seeds. All of us who've gone on cross-culturals have planted a seed by accepting an invitation. As the daughter of a horticulturist, this is where I apologize. This is a really terrible and inaccurate metaphor, but I do know that one of the ways that seeds grow is they're watered. So one of my questions is, how do we become faithful gardeners? How do we water these seeds? So over the next few months that led up to actually going to Iran, I feel like this invitation, the seed was watered by many people in my life. I had lots of conversations with Daryl Beiler, lots of conversations with Ed Martin, lots of conversations with Amir and Shada, and people just watered and watered and watered this invitation. And so then we went to Iran and were able to travel to Qom, to Kashan, to Isfahan, to Shiraz, and to Tehran. And walk into what I can truly say was the most beautiful and complex place that I have ever been. Also, in my last week before leaving, a friend of mine shared a letter with me, and this letter, in many ways, became my closest friend while I was in Iran. And in it, she shared what was very appropriately a quote from a book titled The Faithful Gardener. And this quote said, "And more astonishingly yet, new life will come whether you will it or not." So in Iran, new life came, and I would like to think and hope that we willed it, but many, many seeds were planted. And so in reflecting about what to share, I just ended up asking myself the same question over and over and over. How do I faithfully garden the relationships that I made in Iran? How do I faithfully garden the impacts that these trips have had on my life? And so I offer that to you guys as well, and say that I don't know, but I hope that it opens up a conversation and that you will continue to have conversations with the people who went on your trip with you, that you will continue to have conversations to people you're in close relationship with, and that you'll continue to ask hard questions in your classes. I think that these seeds are pretty precious and these seeds are pretty sacred, and that the task of a faithful gardener and an invitation should be taken pretty seriously with responsibility, but also with a lot of joy. And so I just want to end with a quote from a poet, which I feel like is appropriate, Iran being a place of tremendous poetry. For anyone familiar with Rumi or Hafez or Saidi, they all came out of this incredible place and I think offered us a lot of wisdom. And so Hafez says, "We have not come seeking recognition. We have come at an invitation. This invitation is to love and be love."
It's been wonderful to hear the reflections from five different groups that engaged several other cultures over the summer months. Last week, Spain and Lithuania, and this week, these. We're grateful for you sharing from your insights and your encounters and experiences.